the cat has decided that now is the time to do a little bit of a stinky.
Great, good. It sounds like everything's going great on your end.
Yeah, it's going to be great. The smell's going to be divine. I should light a candle.
Speaking of stinkies, this movie.
Oh my god.
Welcome to Direct Video VHS.
VHS.
A podcast where we pair movies like fine wine.
Like a fine wine.
Like a fine. God, this one,
is,
huh?
Is there like such a thing as like a $1, like a 99-cent store wine?
I mean, there's probably there's probably something. It's and we make the reference to boxed wine and stuff a lot because we did choose the tagline and then continued to watch some bullshit movies. So here's the thing about this particular, shall we call it a movie, first and possibly, probably last time I'll make that joke. It works better in text.
where did you watch this movie?
Where did I watch this? I watched it fucking on my phone in the middle of the night because I was like, this isn't worth a big screen. And I was correct.
That's fair. I watched it on, and this is a joke courtesy of Mavis, on the couch.
Awful.
Yeah. So,
perfect. Wonderful. I love that. Mavis is great at jokes. Anyway, we watched Home on the Range, which was sold to me. I don't know if anybody else remembers this because I think it was in the podcast.
It should be, yeah.
Was sold to me as a movie in which cows try to become singers, which is why it has been paired with Country Bears. This is not what the movie's about.
This is what I remember the movie being about.
They don't even have a song, I don't think. All the songs, it's like your least favorite thing. It's like in Tarzan where Phil Collins just starts singing.
No, yeah, except for the villain song, which we'll get to.
Which was, yeah, I have honestly like two opinions about this movie because the rest of the movie is so bland and nothing that I can't even form an opinion about it. But one of my two opinions is about the villain song.
No, I have two things about this movie that I like, and we'll get to it
even extremely strong. It is hard. It was hard to find redeeming qualities of this movie, and I'll tell you why. The movie's not bad so much as it is mind-numbingly boring. Like, fucking nothing happens in this movie. I don't care about the characters. They're trying to do a fucking Toy Story here with these mismatched characters, and it just doesn't work.
They even got the voice actors from Toy Story. Like, one of the chickens is voiced by the same voice actress as Mrs. Potato Head.
Oh, yeah, you could hear her in there 100%.
And I believe one of the cows is the same voice actress as Jessie from the movies as well.
Oh, is that the third cow that doesn't? Yeah. That is fully unimportant to the plot and is not doing it. I guess, arguably integral to the plot. She's not an important character. Her character doesn't feel important.
No. Well, no character feels important because this movie is ephemeral. I'm trying to think of like a bland food, you know, because it is because I don't even want to say it's a glass of water because a glass of water is refreshing and nourishing, you know.
You compared Bartok the Magnificent to a body temperature glass of water, and I feel like feel like we might also be there with this one, where it's just like this is nothing. I don't even have a real objection to it, except that it's a Disney movie, which means it should be much better than this.
This is the thing that really frustrated me about watching this movie is that for all intents and purposes, the movie is fine. It's 77 minutes. It has some decent jokes. The animation quality is honestly pretty top-notch. There is some really good animation on display in this film.
I was also pretty okay with the way you could see them working the 3D animation into it in a way that is much more of a shortcut than it is in like Beauty and the Beast or something. But it was like, it was fine. Like they would use these 3D animations to like build a, like you could see it on the farm a lot. They clearly built the farm in a 3D space. And I was like, this is fine. This looks good.
Yeah. I can see somebody watching this and asking themselves, why is this movie get so much hate? Like it, what makes this movie worse than say Brother Bear?
Well, I'm not here to give credit where it's due. I'm not sure it's worse than Brother Bear, but I think it's a hills and valleys thing, right?
Yeah.
Brother Bear has some moments that can connect with you because there are such fucking valleys in Brother Bear where you're like, I fucking hate this movie right now.
No, absolutely.
And this movie's just flat planes all the way through.
It's a mesa.
Yeah.
And what it is also, I think, is like you have to put yourself in the mindset of like a person in 2004 who's like, this might be the last 2D animated movie ever made by Disney.
That's what it said in the fucking trailer. They said that. They're like, this is going to be our last one. It was sold on that concept.
Yeah, like really think about that. And then you watch this movie and you're like, this fucking sucks. Like it truly is. I've always had the opinion that like the worst thing that a piece of media can be is bland, because if it's bad, that's an opinion. If it's like a pure like a thin film of milk toast, like it's more infuriating because your brain is like struggling to find some form of some reason for existence. And this movie, I think, is the epitome of like bland being the worst experience you can have watching something.
Yeah. I'll tell you what my big problem with it was. And again, it wasn't even like a big problem because it didn't elicit a strong reaction on me. But as I was watching the movie, I kept thinking like, fucking Roseanne.
Yeah. Yeah.
Does not make any funny jokes in this movie. And it's clearly what her character's supposed to be is kind of like in your face. I kept comparing her to like Timon, but almost like not Timon in Lion King, like Timon in Lion King 1.5, where like the whole thing is he's like, he talks like he's a fucking taxi driver in New York.
I mean, I think that's just what that actor sounds like.
And all these animals are like, what is this guy even doing here? And it's clearly what she's supposed to be. She's supposed to be like big city, supposed to be like in your face, and she's fucking bland as hell and nothing. And it's like they're supposed to be this fucking, she's supposed to be butting heads with the Dame Judy Dent. Dame Judy Dench, excuse me.
Wow, say that 5 times fast.
And like both of them just feel too moderate to like actually be butting heads. They're not different enough.
I'm gonna take a quick aside here. So just you know, yeah, bear with me for a couple of minutes.
There's a bear with you?
Yes.
Sorry.
Just a quick aside.
Yeah, sorry,
a quick aside.
Sorry, yes.
So this movie stars the lead character in this movie is ostensibly Roseanne Barr, and the lead villain in this movie is Randy Quaid. And some of you listeners who might be keeping in touch with like recent, like just like incredibly recent news might know that both of these people are kind of huge pieces of shit. Incredibly right wing awful pieces of shit. And like I we're not going to talk about it other than this aside, so just keep that in mind also, that while you're watching this movie, that like these two people like within like a decade and a half are gonna like just kind of do some pretty awful stuff. I mean, Randy Quaid's just kind of like a kook, but Roseanne Barr gets herself into some huge fucking trouble.
I'm real quick going to Randy Quaid's
Wikipedia,
like, what's the big thing about Randy Quaid? I was outspoken supporter of Donald Trump.
Yeah, fine, sure.
Oh, and he's a big proponent of spreading election fraud. God damn it.
Yeah. Quaid. No, I don't know a lot about Dennis Quaid and the other Quaid, but Randy Quaid apparently has fallen into a hole of sorts. Oh, wait, didn't Dennis Quaid start a podcast over the pandemic?
Everybody started a podcast over the pandemic.
That's true. That's true. So, yeah.
It's not super important. The point is that, though, that, like, you might get this little itch of, like, feeling grossed out while watching the movie. And,
yeah,
and it's not because of the movie itself.
No, no. It's, you might be getting some strong feelings. And, like, it's not, I can assure you that that is not the movie putting those feelings within you. That is, like, the vestiges of time. Reaching out with its gross hand.
There's one bit where the movie might kind of put that feeling in you.
It walks a fine line. My note here is walking a fine line of racism, which we'll get to.
Oh, I was even thinking just before that. The fine line of racism. I looked at that for a while, and I was like, I think I'll allow it.
No, yeah, I was also like, it's fine.
The conceit of the communication breakdown of this, like, new immigrant being like, wow, free cows, because this other guy just assumed they were his cows and they couldn't talk to each other. I was like, okay, that's a pretty good, that's theoretically a good gag. Yeah. It didn't work because the movie's not funny, but it's theoretically a good gag. No, mine was before that when there was a brief, I wouldn't exactly call it explicitly transphobic, but there's a brief moment where a showgirl ends up in the lap of a cowboy, and it turns out that the showgirl is the cowboy's dad.
Oh,
and there's
reason
for that to be in there for, like, non-mean-spirited purposes. Oh,
this is another thing about the movie that's wild, is that a lot of the jokes in this movie are clearly aimed at adults.
Yeah, and like, where's that coming from?
No, yeah, so, like, it's like,
there's, like, nothing for a kid to grasp onto in this movie, I feel like.
Even the conceit of the film, right? It's like, not every kid, and I'm going to drag my dad a little bit here.
Get him!
Not every kid spends their time watching old Westerns on TMC, you know? Like, that's not a thing that, like, kids like to do, Dad. But, like, so, like, if you... There's so much, and, like, this movie isn't a Western. This movie's like a bad road trip movie, maybe. Like, I don't really know.
But it kind of wants to be a Western. It's built on the Western conceit.
Yeah, it has all the tropes in it, but the thing is like, I don't know, like, how is a kid supposed to recognize this stuff, right? Like, in 2004, like, other than the classic, like, whistle sting, right? Like, kids don't know shit about Westerns. Nobody cares. Mm-hmm. Like, the biggest Western to come out in 2004 was probably, like, Dances with Wolves in 98, which no child should be watching. Like, Dad. So it's like, it's just one of those things where it's like, yeah, like, what is a child supposed to really, like, grab onto? And, like, don't get me wrong, I love Dame Judi Dench. I love Judi Dench, by the way. Like, she's a great actress. And also, I would say that of the three cows, she brings in the strongest performance. But I do think a big part of that is because she's Dame Judi Dench. She, like, commands obeisance, you know? Like,
my problem is, I was watching this movie, and they were trying to do, like, a fucking Buzz and Woody between these two,
yes,
right?
Yes, they are. They absolutely are.
But her character does not have enough time to breathe to be Woody. If you watch Toy Story, it's about Woody. It's, like, not about Buzz.
No, it's kind of a thing that people have pointed out, I think, is that four? All of the Toy Story movies are about Woody. Every single one of them.
Okay, so wait, hold up. There will be a fifth Toy Story movie. I don't think it's out yet.
You're kidding me, really?
I am not. I watched the fourth Toy Story movie recently, and I was like, this is actually pretty good.
I rather enjoyed it.
But it ruins the last movie and is pre-ruined by knowing there's a sequel to this one.
Yeah.
It was such a good last movie that I was like, it ruins three, because three was also a good last movie.
Yeah.
And then now there's going to be a next movie. So what are we even doing here?
I will say, I think Toy Story 4 was my favorite of them. Prior to that, I think 2 was my favorite. So yeah, I don't know what 5 is going to be about, unless it's just, like, you know, small soldiers but with toys again. I guess small soldiers was about toys.
We are gonna, at some point, probably have to do kind of a deep dive into the Toy Story universe. That's one of those ones that I feel like has been put off for a while because they're all good movies.
They're all great. And also, I watched Toy Stories 1 and 2, like, religiously as a child. I could probably recite both of those movies, like, line for line. Because I watched them obsessively. And also the bonus features that were at the end of the VHS tape.
Yeah, I mean, if and when we did do a Toy Story episode, my first question would be how many leaves there are in Andy's neighborhood.
2.6 million.
Okay. Anyway, we're a little off track. But like, these characters don't get the time to be characters because this plot keeps happening, but the plot isn't really engaging on its own.
It's almost a series of vignettes as well, right? Like a series of Looney Tunes sketches is like what this movie's doing. And it doesn't help that it's set in like Arizona, like, you know, the Arizona desert.
It feels like a Wile E. Coyote bit a lot of the time.
Yeah.
These cows.
These cows.
Roseanne is the main character. I do not remember her name. It doesn't
matter. Maggie.
Sure. She's the main character. All of the cows on her ranch were stolen except her.
Because she was in a pen. Because she's a show cow.
Because she's a show cow. And so she gets dropped off at Bit of Heaven, Slice of Heaven, something like that.
Something like that.
And so she's got to start a new life there. The fact that she has a deep and abiding hurt for her loss of home will virtually never come up. They keep trying to make it part of her character, and it just doesn't sell at all.
The problem is that the time it took you to explain all of that is about how much time the movie takes to do it, right?
Like, yeah, it's fucking wild. We're like 5 minutes into the movie, and all these characters are already like all together and interacting, and it's like, and then 5 minutes after that, they're like, oh, we're gonna lose the farm.
It's insane. It's insane that like she just got here and now this farm is getting sold too. There should be more emotion.
I will give it this. They got the plot going, but I'll take this away from it. This plot did not need to go this fast. There's basically two things that happen in this movie. It didn't need to happen this way.
So they decide Maggie's idea to save the farm, the new farm, not the old farm. Who gives a shit about the old farm? We're past that now.
But also not really.
Not really. Yeah. I
should mention.
No, you're good. You're good.
Because it is not ever truly handled at all. There's no talking about this. There's no consequence of this.
Yeah.
But all of Maggie's friends are dead. There has been what amounts to a cattle genocide. And of course, in this world, cattle are thinking creatures.
Well, I get what you're saying, but that's what was going to happen to them. I don't know what this movie thinks happens at the end of cattle drives.
This is an excellent point as well. So Maggie happens to be on the one farm that raises chickens and pigs, not for eating, just because this old lady is basically the old lady from Fox and the Hound and just likes having animals around.
Oh my God. I didn't even think about Fox and the Hound because to compare that movie to this movie feels like a sin to me.
I thought about Fox and the Hound nonstop, and it's because Fox and the Hound is a better movie with, frankly, too much emotional depth in it.
Yes, yeah, that movie goes too hard. The sheriff tells this old woman, you could just sell your animals, and she's like, they're family, and I'm like, lady, they're animals.
He's not even saying sell the animals. He's selling sell a couple of animals. He's like, you could make this $750 that you need. Such a small amount of money. What the fuck?
Come on. We're talking like 1800s, right? Like, of money in the 1800s.
Yeah. Hey, it's a lot of money, but also make it 2000. Make it 10,000. Make it a dumb number.
Make it make it a number that is understandable by modern audiences.
I don't need it to make sense. I need it to feel important. You know what I mean?
Yeah, 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 yeah. Because the stakes of this movie feel absurdly low.
Really tiny.
it doesn't help. And also,
the villain is... No, we'll get to the villain in a bit.
The villain deserves their own entire, like, section. Because it also doesn't help that this farm is, like, the most, like, cottage-core, tiny-ass farm in the world. And I'm like, really? $750? The other farm was bigger, you know?
How does she even... She's so old. How does she even still have a mortgage on this farm?
Like, also, she seems... Yeah, right. I know. What the fuck is she doing? Also, apparently she's been missing payments her whole life. Because the sheriff is like...
They'll get my payment eventually. Like, I guess she's just been paying interest for like 60 years. What are we doing?
This is why you got to be on top of that shit. If you're just paying interest and you're not like getting through and like cutting out the underlying deposit, like you're just in forever debt. We call that the Argentina syndrome. Like, you can't do that.
Particularly because by the end of the movie, it is shown that all of her animals are like perfect show animals. Get a blue ribbon. So, like, if she was just taking them to the fair and for the show, she would get, it says, like, you know, maybe $60 an animal.
She's just out there growing fucking carrots. Like, she's just out there growing fucking carrots. And for what? Like, who's she selling these carrots to?
And the fucking sheriff's horse tramples all over her land every time he comes by. That made me so mad, and then she didn't react to it at all.
I would be pissed. I'd be livid. I'd be like, hey, motherfucker, guess what? That's where those $750 are coming from. No, and here's the other thing, is this woman is, like, nowhere near a river. She's, like, in the middle of Arizona or something. I don't actually know where this movie takes place.
Yeah, but it has Arizona vibes, or, like, you know, it's a desert. I'm trying to remember if I see a saguaro. If there's a saguaro, it's Arizona.
No, there is. There absolutely is, because the jackrabbit runs into one.
Great. Then we're going to call it Arizona.
Me and you have driven through this part of the world. Like,
absolutely.
She is nowhere near a river. Nowhere near a river. How the fuck is she growing these carrots? And also, why is she growing carrots? Those are tubers. Like, you got to grow something that grows above the ground, like cabbages. I am, like, infuriated by this. Like, it's so little thought was put into this, like, cutesy little farm that belongs on, like, in, like, Northern California.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, what she has is essentially a large garden.
Yeah.
And you can't imagine she is actually selling these crops for a profit.
No.
So what is she doing? I mean, I guess there's an implication that what she basically runs is a...
Like an old folks home for animals?
Yeah, like a... I'm trying to think of the word. Like basically a shelter, I guess, or a reserve when the farms get taken away, you know?
But we get a sad montage, a Toy Story 2-ass sad montage of this old woman packing up her house, right?
Yeah.
And every and she single raised animal these
animals since they were babies.
Since they were babies, every single one of these animals has a photo dedicated to it, except Maggie, because Maggie's not from here.
Right.
Can I
mention something too? I fucking needed her to have a dead spouse. Because I needed some kind of emotional depth. When she says this is her home, I want her to say that she buried somebody here. I was like, fucking, why is it your home? Show me why.
If this was a Western, that is absolutely what she would have said.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that's how this works. Maybe she buried a kid here. Like, that's what you do. But this movie can't do that because it's ostensibly for children.
I mean, it could, though. Do you know who dies is everybody's parents in a Disney movie. But this movie is completely void of anything that would give it that style of emotional depth. There is no moment when somebody is crying over their trampled father.
No, no, no. Yeah, at no point does somebody have to, like, deal with the emotional backlash of realizing that their father is growing old and could die someday. You know, or anything like that. It's just like,
whatever.
Yeah. Who cares? Yeah.
There's a monetary problem. It's solvable. That's what the thing's about.
Yeah. I guess the thing that this movie has in common with the Country Bears is that there is an incredibly solvable monetary problem.
it's not enough money to repossess this place.
So the cows' plan to save the farm is that they are going to go to town and convince the sheriff's horse to give them a 1 week.
2 weeks, to yes.
Go 2 weeks to go to the show fair that's happening in 2 weeks, so that if they take all the blue ribbons, they'll save up $70. And now, here is the first, here's the one of the two things about this movie that I actually like. Disney has, I think, the best dogs in the business. I don't know what magic spell that Walt Disney himself cast over his own production crew, but every time there's a dog in a Disney movie, I love that for them.
That's gotta be back from 101 Dalmatians, right?
It's the same dog.
There was a movie where they figured out dogs.
No, absolutely. Well,
and then that's
also
just part of it now.
This specific style of dog, this like old Basset Hound, has been in, I think, every Disney movie since 101 Dalmatians, right? Because it's in 101 yes. Dalmatians. It's in Lady and the Tramp. It's in the Aristocats.
Now, like, was this the same style of dog that's in Cinderella? Is it the... Remember, Cinderella had like an old hound, right?
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah, like a bloodhound.
This is like core ancient Disney.
Yeah, and so and they always find like just like the most tired voice actor in the world. And it's great, and I love it. And Disney should keep doing that. I don't think I've seen a Disney movie that has an old ass dog in it in a while. And like, I don't know, put it in the next one. How much could it cost, really? Get Ed Asner. Oh, I think Ed Asner passed away recently, actually. But get some old fuck like in the booth. Just be like, I'm old. I ain't deaf. I love it. It's so good. This dog smells, because it's a bloodhound, smells the piece of paper that has the money they owe on it, and is like, no, I think you guys owe more than that. I think you guys owe $750.
$750. I do enjoy that these cows have no real concept of money. Even the show cow is like,
and also the fact that this horse Buck, we're gonna talk about Buck. This horse has no ability to stop anything. It's a horse.
Okay, yes. So that was actually my big issue. Is she's like, we're gonna talk that horse into giving us 2 weeks, and I was like, are you like, is that a thing that can happen? Like,
yeah, is the horse just gonna knock this guy out for 2 weeks? Like, how?
Even if the sheriff, it would be you'd be a pretty shaky guy to try to get to do, because this isn't really a law problem. This is a personal finance problem. This is the bank. You have to talk to the bank about this.
Yeah,
now,
and
maybe
like,
the sheriff could talk to the bank and get them to give some kind of leeway. But
I don't understand why the sheriff is delivering bank notices. Like,
no,
what the fuck?
Hey, it doesn't make sense. I'm not certain what the sheriff's doing, literally at all, in this entire movie.
Well,
he runs the auction like it's a police auction, but it's not.
Yeah, and I guess his job as sheriff is to give bounty hunters money for doing his job. Which is bananas, now that I'm saying it out loud.
I mean, that is structurally part of the sheriff's job, I feel like, but...
Yeah, but it shouldn't be the whole thing, right?
It shouldn't
right?
be his whole job.
Listen, I'm not a big believer in the idea of, like, police forces, but, like, that's not the whole job, right?
But what he's essentially doing is just allowing a private citizen to be the police force, which is not better.
No, that's what I'm saying is it's very odd, the whole, and also he's delivering bank notices. This guy's whole life is fucked up.
Yeah.
So he also acts, I think, as mayor, which that kind of makes sense, because this is like a tiny, like hoedown.
I mean, I could certainly see that. You know, it's also an elected position. It's like, yeah, look, you people have elected me. Let me talk to you about stuff. I that's fine. If it's a small enough town, I get it.
They it turns out that there is a bounty for exactly $750 out for Alameda Slim.
There are little things in this movie that I think you could have put some effort into it. For instance, if they owed $755 and Alameda Slim was $750 and they would talk about how they would get $5, I just think that would have put a little bit more energy into the movie, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Or, you know, hey, listen, I don't know if you've ever heard of the anime Trigun.
Sure.
But it's one of the greatest animes, in my opinion. In that show, the main character has a bounty on his head for, I believe it's 20 million double dollars. Which is...
What? So is that 40 million?
No, double dollars are the new currency.
Oh my god, terrible! All right, great.
But that's what I'm saying though is you wanna zhuzh up this movie a little bit. Have these cows. This guy is worth $20 million. 20 million double dollars.
I mean, but this is what I was talking about earlier. Like, she should owe $10,000 on the farm, and this guy's bounty should be $10,000. Why are we dealing with this?
We are penny pinching. We are penny pinching in this movie. Alameda Slim is a cattle thief.
Mm-hmm. A rustler,
and. And is also, in fact, the cattle thief that stole all of the cows at the beginning of the movie.
He is...
This is great. Poetic.
Virtually, he is the cattle thief. There is nobody else in business anymore.
Yeah, because they've all been dosed out by this bounty hunter called... Fuck me, dude. Some bounty hunter. He's like a, you know, with no name type guy.
He has like a one word. He has like a one syllable name, I want to say. Yeah.
Like Rick or Rust or something.
No, it's like a nickname style thing, I think. Let me pull up IMDb real quick.
I'm also trying to pull it up. Oh no, I don't want the song. I want the film.
Is it Rico?
Rico.
Okay. Yeah, all right. So he's been capturing every other cattle rustler. Now there's only Alameda Slim left.
We just need to talk about Alameda Slim. At some point, the cows go off to catch Alameda Slim, and then they run into him, stealing another herd of cows.
Can we take a moment? Can we take a step back for a hot second to talk a little bit about Buck?
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah. Thank you.
Is the bit where we meet Buck. Buck.
Buck.
Is...
A horse.
Cuba Gooding Jr. He is...
Yes. In the wildest casting choice.
He is played super obnoxious. He is absolutely ridiculous. He is fundamentally... And I see what they're trying to do, but he is coded so much more as the hero of this movie.
Mm-hmm.
What they're trying to do is something that I have seen done very few times well. It would be occasionally in like a Murder, She Wrote or like a Terry Pratchett book where like the young, dumb adventurer type is not going to solve this problem. And it's up to the little old ladies to do it. But they do not sell this at all. And this guy's just obsessed with... I forgot his name already. With Rico.
Rico.
And he wants to go out with Rico and find Alameda Slim. So that's what he's going to do. He's mean to the cows. But I cannot fault him for it because the cows are unaccountably mean to him first. For no fucking reason. Yeah, he's a dumb idiot. But they call him a dumb idiot to his face. And it's like, why? Why are we all so mean to each other immediately?
It's true. There's no setup. Although, I mean, I guess he does destroy their carrot patch, which is messed up.
Nobody gives any nobody shit about that.
Nobody cares about the nobody like, cares. About the, cares.
The movie does not care that that happened.
Yeah, I do think it's the problem with Buck. This is a very early, like early 90s Cuba Gooding Jr. role too. It's so weird to hear him doing this. I feel like he doesn't do this anymore because he's like 50. But like
he's like serious now. Like he plays
He
played O.J. Simpson in American Crime Story.
Yeah, great role. Okay, so like the part of the problem with this character is that at he just kind of like all the characters in this movie, he just kind of like stays the same, and
yeah,
at no point does he ever really go through like a character shift. So he's just this at this energy level every time he's on screen, and after a while it becomes a bit much. Like at the
the point is that at the start it's a bit much, but at the end when it's like, look, he gets to act out his favorite fantasies, I'm like, why did I want him to do this? I didn't want him to do this.
Yeah, I don't want him to do this because he sucks. He's bad. He shouldn't this was want not this.
I don't
want
to see a horse doing karate moves. Have you learned nothing from every other movie you've ever made, Disney?
Oh my God. And also we get to see a cow do a karate move at the end of this movie. Terrible. Terrible.
It's just that, like, every animated movie with a horse, the horse becomes the fan favorite character. I'm talking Road to El Dorado. I'm talking Tangled, Sleeping Beauty. Like,
absolutely. Sleeping Beauty.
Oh, yeah, absolutely Sleeping Beauty. He's got a horse. Mulan, just like every...
Yes.
Every movie with a horse, the horse is great, and it's because it acts like a fucking horse.
It's because it acts like a horse, or at the very least, it acts like a dog, like a big dog.
101 Dalmatians, there was a great horse in that movie.
Yeah, there was a great horse in that movie.
I love all animated horses to the
point. Is there a horse in Fox and the Hound?
Yes, there is. Amazing. Although I don't remember him that well.
Me neither. Oh, there's a horse in Aristocats. That horse is great.
That horse is also good, yeah. I like all horses in animated movies to the point that it took me forever to like really click with the fact that Buck sucks. Cause I was I kept wanting to give him the benefit of the doubt. Cause he's a cool horse.
He's a horse. And he looks good. He like it, like again, very well animated. Like,
but by the end, when he's like doing karate moves, I'm like, I don't give a shit about this fucking horse. Why is he doing karate moves? He's a horse.
Also, and I cannot stress this enough, he is the primary antagonist of this film for about 40 minutes of runtime. Yeah,
for most of the film.
Which is insane.
The thing that actually gets in their way because Alameda Slim does not even know about these cows.
Well, he does. Alameda Slim does know about these cows, but barely.
Barely. There's also very briefly another horse who I liked a lot better, a mistake.
You know who that horse was voiced by?
Absolutely. I mean, he didn't change his voice from the Kronk voice.
It's just Patrick Warburton just being like, just that. I love that scene. I love that horse. No, but also, what a piece of shit Buck is.
It was one of the two scenes of the two parts of this movie that I enjoyed.
I wish there was more. If they had gotten Patrick Warburton to be this horse, I think it would have worked 100% better. No offense to Cuba Gooding Jr., but I just think his energy is too high. Like, he needed to tone it down a little bit. And to be fair, I don't think that's Cuba Gooding Jr.'s fault. I think that's the direction. That's the writing's fault.
Well, do you know what it reminded me of? It reminded me of Osmosis Jones.
Oh, yes. Wow.
I can't believe I have to think about that movie again. I cannot remember who that was.
Chris Rock? Yeah. Was that Chris Rock?
Was it Chris Rock? It might be. I'm just going to type it.
That was Chris Rock.
Okay, it was Chris Rock. So
that's crazy.
But that's the character he's playing is like the sort of wild half of the buddy cop. Like he needs a serious buddy cop, but he doesn't have that. All he has is these cows who he doesn't interact with except to be mean to or try to escape.
He has a buddy cop for about 2 minutes in the form of this awesome dog.
That's true. But then he leaves the dog. And then later, I guess he kind of teams up with the rabbit very briefly.
This rabbit, it really feels like a late game addition.
Honestly, the rabbit breathed a little bit of life into this movie where it needed some.
I rather enjoyed the rabbit.
Yeah. But it was too little too late. Like, we see the rabbit at the beginning and we see the rabbit at the end, and it's like, where was the rabbit for the middle of this movie? I needed him here.
Yeah, why did we wait so long? Also, I think
kind of got Rafiki vibes, this rabbit.
A little bit. I mean, he does say that he's their shaman, which I don't appreciate. But like,
he does say that, and then wildly doesn't do any shaman shit.
No, yeah. I mean, again, good. It's good that he does it, but also it's weird that he says that.
Why did he say that?
He should have been like, "I'm your spirit animal," and then had a whole song about how he's their spirit animal, and then he just disappears for the rest of the movie.
That would have been a good movie. No, I mean, it would have been a bad movie, but it would have been... We would have had something to talk about.
Should we rewatch that movie? I don't want to, but at the same time, I kind of do.
Yeah, we'll see. Anyway, so, we were going to get to Alameda Slim.
So the cows meet up with Alameda Slim. They get to a cattle drive. They are... harassed, assaulted, harangued by a couple of male cows who suck. Mm-hmm. And the less said about them, the better. They're going to reoccur in the movie about 3 more times, and every time it's bad.
Yeah. There is one good male cow in this movie, and it's a buffalo. I like him. Yes, he's fun.
I also rather enjoy the buffalo. The buffalo's good. I don't know what the plate tectonics of like a buffalo and a cow being together are, but I
wasn't
going to
ask. Not my place for sure.
Yeah, yeah. So So Alameda Slim dispatches these cows with ease. Because
I was torn on the concept of them facing him so early, honestly. Early. But it's also the only way to introduce what is effectively his superpower.
Yes.
Which is that Alameda Slim, and okay, I don't like Alameda Slim because I like very little of this movie at all.
But yeah,
there was something about him that almost worked, and it was this. He gets off the horse and he starts like haranguing his boys. And
no, he gets off the buffalo.
Yes, you're right. He gets off the buffalo. He rides a buffalo. It's kind of great. Mm-hmm. He gets off, he starts haranguing his boys, and he is, because buffalo is the same silhouette as him. That's why it's good. Anyway, it doesn't matter. And he starts the song, and I'm like, is this guy seriously just going to be this character? This character is nothing. This is not very interesting. He's just like a mean villain, cowboy-style character. And then he starts yodeling, and it takes control. It hypnotizes the cows so he can capture them all. And I won't say that it's good.
No.
But it could have been done in a way that is good.
It is the most, like, an idea that this movie has.
Yes. And like, that's where I was like, okay. And then like, I mean, like nothing happens to it, but like,
no,
it's almost good. And I'm always kind of there for an almost good idea.
No, absolutely. It's, again, it's the most idea that this movie has is the fact that this is a like a yodeling Pied Piper.
Yeah. Cause that is also, I feel like, unknown thing about cows. I think cows just like any weird sound. I think they always go to investigate it.
I do think that there is like in sheep herding in like Scotland, they do like a version, mm-hmm. like a yodeling call to get them back in the pen.
I just like, I've seen people playing trumpets for cows. The cows come and see them. You've seen that Muppet clip, right?
Yeah.
Where they were doing the testing for the Muppets to see how they would do under light, and they were just doing it from the cows. All the cows were like crowding around, like, "What's happening here?
What the fuck is this?" Yeah, cows are you know, cows are curious creatures.
And I think that's what it comes down to. But you also kind of know in the back of your mind, there's like some part of me at least that's like, I think cows like yodeling, so this works.
Yeah, it's fine. It's just like, again, to what end, you know? Because Alameda Slim steals this herd of calves,
mm-hmm.
By yodeling. He almost takes Marge and Miss Calloway. Thank you, Wikipedia.
That's
Judi Dench. But does not take Grace, who is the other cow who doesn't matter, because Grace is tone deaf. That's her superpower, basically.
In this way, she is the most integral to the plot, but also she is the least of a character. Do you know who could have done this character well? is Betty White.
Oh, yeah.
I low-key thought Betty White would probably be in this movie.
I would have rather enjoyed if this was just like a Golden Girls reunion.
That would be amazing! But it's not, so it's not.
Yeah.
So yeah, they end up the only cattle not captured, and they didn't get Alameda Slim, and I guess they fight about it. I don't know what else happens in this movie. I'm like out of this movie now.
Yeah, it's okay, so
it feels like we got to this part like 20 minutes in, and like, what are we doing now?
Yeah, right, because like, so after this, then we just kind of fuck around for like 40 minutes.
Yeah.
There's a flood, the cows get into a fight, they make a wager, they meet the jackrabbit tells them, hey, this is where the end of the movie is, I'll take you there, and they're like, great, it's because it's about time for this movie to end.
Yep.
And the entire time, Alameda Slim is in his big cave, and in his big cave that has a train going through it, and he's about to sell off these 4,997 cows.
Sorry, can I mention something that I dislike about Alameda Slim?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He is like unto a Marvel villain.
Yeah.
For the reason that he has a pretty good point about society as it is, and nobody else is going to deal with it. He's like, I was looked down on when I worked with these cattle ranches, even though I'm very good at ranching cattle, as you can see.
Yeah.
He was looked down on by all these property owners. So to get back at them, he's going to steal all the cattle and buy all the property. It's not a terrible plan. And also, it's like, he's right. He has an excellent point.
This is a real Lex Luthor ass plan, by the way, which is, you know what the real evil is? Buying property.
I'm gonna buy property on the line between Arizona and California, and then blow up California so it's beachfront property.
Ah, so good. What a terrible idea.
There is that movie is irredeemably stupid, and I would rather have watched it.
No, it's great. I love the original Superman movie. It's fantastic. It's like the right amount of melodrama.
He flies backwards around the world
to go back in time.
That's not how anything works. That wasn't how any of this worked. And the thing is, if he could do that, why didn't he just stop the bomb?
It was in a moment of despair, man. He didn't know what he was capable of.
I would be in a real moment of despair if I was trying to stop two bombs that could only get one.
That is fair. I would also be in a moment of despair. So.
Sorry.
Oh, another thing about Alameda Slim. Just a little thing. This is the most Jim Cummings character I have ever seen come out of a Disney movie. This guy was made to be voiced by Jim Cummings, and the fact that it's not makes me sad. It would have been better because Jim Cummings has a presence every time he shows up, you know? And I think this character could have used a little bit of that to at the very least make him likable. Because the thing is that he's not likable. He kind of sucks.
He has the same problem, and it might just, I want to be fair, it might just be a direction thing.
Because he has the same problem as
literally every other character, which is, I don't care about you. Like, it's just so bland. I can't even bring myself to hate him.
Like, it's part of the problem with, like, oh, like you mentioned that his whole deal is that he got scorned. I missed that. I don't know when that happens in the movie where he says that, but the entire movie I was like, why is he doing this? Why is he doing this? This is so much work, and I don't know why any of this is happening. Like,
Genuinely, I think he has too much of a reason for doing it. I think he has too much of a point.
He needs less of a reason.
Why should those people have all that money and all that land? Fuck those guys.
But now instead of it being 20 people, it's one guy. And this guy sucks.
I mean, Well, but this is what I mean about how he has, like, the Marvel villain energy of, like, oh, there's something I hate about the world, and therefore I'm going to destroy everything. And the hero's like, you can't destroy everything, I'll stop you! And doesn't fix the thing that is bad about the world.
Yeah, we don't end up... Oh, God, we'll talk about that. So, now we can talk about the Willy Brothers. The other thing about this movie that I liked. I rather enjoyed these three.
They're fine.
For a moment, I thought there were only two of them.
Well, they're all drawn exactly the same, which is a pretty good gag.
Yeah, they're like the, and they're like, their whole thing is that they're just like dumb nephews, which I love. I love how they sound. I love that they all have the same voice actor and they're all drawn the same. Mm-hmm. And I love this bit because I love it every time it happens in a movie, that when their uncle dresses up like his alter ego, I don't remember.
You can't pull this out. I have no idea.
Something Odell.
Sure, probably. Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah, Mr. Odell, who's his alter ego for going and buying all these properties with his ill-gotten money. Every time he dresses up, they're like, hold on a minute, what'd you do to our uncle? And they're like, and then they like put up their dukes to fight him, and it's great. I love that bit. It's fantastic. I love dumb jokes like that. That's it. That's all there is to them.
Yeah, they're fine.
Sorry, we're done. Yeah, they're a 3-minute bit in a 77-minute movie, and the fact that that's like my favorite thing in the movie is a problem.
There is a pretty good gag that one of them always sits in front of the same spot
on
their giant map. So Alabaster Slim, or whatever the hell his name is, did not realize that there was a piece of land he hadn't owned yet. That was
God. And here's we run into Alameda one of the big...
Alameda Slim, excuse me.
It's fine. No one gives a shit. And herein we run into another big problem with this movie, because he's like, oh my God, there's this patch of land, this slice of heaven or whatever, that I haven't bought yet. What am I going to do about it? And then one of his nephews is like, well,
it's on sale in like 2 days.
2 days. And he's like, oh, well, great. That's awesome. And it's like, no, movie, this should be the thing. This should be the thing where he starts going, where he goes, I mean, this is some real basic screenplay, right? Like, now he has a reason to fuck over this farm. And now he can go fuck it over.
It would have been great if in his disguise, he went over to like talk to that lady and like try to get her to leave, and there could have been a scene between them.
Yeah.
But he didn't. He didn't, and it didn't happen. And so here we are.
And so the cows get to the mine. Bucks
the
there.
The cows get to the mine. Bucks there, which means, and again, I hate to fucking go on and on about Buck, but it also means that, like, this is some hero shit. He already got there. He figured this out. And I realized somehow he was the reason they couldn't follow.
Figure it out.
But, like, it's like he almost could have solved this problem.
He was, except for one reason.
Except we'll he couldn't, actually.
Yeah, he was destined to fail, and we'll get to that. It's a real Greek tragedy. You know, I think if I ever teach a class about Greek tragedies, Buck will be my prime example.
Sure, for sure. Definitely nobody better.
I don't think so. Well, you got to start with an easy example for the kids. You know, fourth grade, is that when you learn about Greek tragedies? I don't know. So
sure, why not?
So they get to the mine, they capture Alameda Slim, but then Buck takes Alameda Slim, and then they have a whole Scooby-Doo-ass hijinks chase throughout the mine. There's a train conductor who's buying all the cows, voiced by Steve Buscemi. He doesn't matter. But and they get him and they have him dead to rights. But then, oh no,
that little rabbit beats the ever loving shit out of him. There are like multiple times that he raises his head and he just smacks him again.
Oh yeah, with a pan for panning gold.
Yeah, like a pan for gold. And it's,
this rabbit's the real hero. Mean,
he has one job and he's doing it well.
Yeah. So they have Alameda Slim dead to rights. They're about to take him in. But oh no, it turns out that Rico is evil. And I think to myself, who cares?
Okay, so let me talk about this bit, though. When I first saw Rico, I was like, this guy's evil.
This guy's right? evil.
Because he's got like a spooky thing. But as the movie went on, I forgot about my assumption that he was evil.
Yeah.
Because this movie, basically this movie is so bland, but also because, like, it really focuses in on this other evil character that I just left him behind. Rico, yeah, he's just this fucking weird guy that the horse is obsessed with.
Yeah.
So when he shows up and he's evil, I was like, I don't care. However, if Disney wanted to have its cake and eat it too about having a villain song and a twist villain,
yep,
this is how you would do it. But they've never done it in a good movie.
Yeah, I kind of wish that they'd done it in a good movie, because it's a good bait and switch to, because you forget about this guy. And also, he spends so much of the movie kind of sort of being competent. That,
yeah, no, he is the fun thing about him is he is like good at his job, and it kind of lulls you into a sense of security about him.
Yeah, but then so then at this point Buck is like sad because it turns out his hero is evil. He does a bunch of karate. I think they kill Rico. I think he dies.
Yeah, probably.
And
they sure don't bring him in.
No, they. Oh, well, yeah. So they, the cows escape. Oh, the cows are captured, but they escape. So who cares?
Yeah.
They get on the train. They disconnect the train from the rest of the train, which means that they leave 4,995 cows in that train.
Well, they let them out.
Do they let them out? Well, only two of them get out. So I was just like, oh, cool. We're just going to leave. But also, they did let them out in the middle of the desert.
They did do that, but the two ones, they're just the horny ones who are following the cows.
Ugh, yeah, terrible. So
the other ones,
like,
get out, and I did have that thought of, like, so they're just in the desert now, huh?
Yeah, they're just going to die. That's just 4,995 cows are going to die.
Yeah.
That's where all those cow heads are coming from in all the rest of these movies.
Oh, that makes sense. This is the prequel to every Looney Tunes cartoon.
Every Looney Tunes bit, yeah. So,
then that rabbit went on to have a child, and it was Bugs Bunny. And now you know the rest of the story.
Oh, and the duck on the farm gives birth to Daffy.
Yeah.
There's a duck on the farm, by the way.
There's a duck on the farm. The duck on the farm is not a character.
No.
None of the other farm animals are characters, despite the fact that they briefly try to make them characters.
They also get full credits. Like, by the way, which is bananas. I that they get full credits. It's weird. Okay, so we are like running dangerously close to talking about this movie longer than this movie exists. So they get back to the farm. Oh, Alameda Slim escapes. He's at the farm. He's buying the farm. The old lady's sad about the farm. The farm animals are sad about the farm. Everyone's sad. But then
they drive a fucking train into the farm, which seems wild. And also, the whole setup is like they're stopping him just before he signs the paper. And the whole time I was thinking, like, he's not signing his real name. This is not a legal document.
Yeah, like, it doesn't matter if he signs the paper or not once it's revealed that he's Alameda Slim and he's been buying all
these
properties.
And he's about to get arrested.
Yeah, like, I don't know. Like, that's someone else's job to figure this shit out. But they capture him in the train. They reveal him with the toot horn. He's about to yodel, but then the cow does karate into his mouth. Karate's a bell into his mouth. I apologize. And, oh, it's Alameda Slim. Here's $750. And the line, I love this line. I love this line so much because because the old lady, whose name I don't know, says out loud, "Woo-wee, my farm is saved." I love this line because it's indicative of just how terrible this movie is.
I might, instead of cutting out any specific conversation that we had to put in like a video for this, I might just have that one bit where you say, "Woo wee, my farm is saved."
My farm is saved. and that's the end of the movie. Except we do get like a fucking like Shakespeare comedy ending where everybody gets a partner.
Yep, classic.
Like, the old lady dates the sheriff, Maggie and Betty, or whatever her name is, date the two horny cows. Judy Dench dates the buffalo.
She definitely got out better in that.
She did.
Judy Dench has fucking standards.
Yeah. And the jackrabbit dates the goat.
Is that supposed to be a jackalope joke now that I think about it? Or is it just they're supposed to be just two old men hanging out?
I think they're just two old men hanging out. Although I will say, there's no way this would be made. I would love Disney. This is a great idea.
Disney's not calling you about this idea.
About two old animals who will go on a road trip together. Maybe, you know, like, what's that one movie about the dog that gets lost? And that there's cat and they're trying to find their child.
Oh, you mean Homeward Bound,
yeah.
The Incredible Journey. There are two dogs in that one.
Are there two dogs? Oh, I guess you're right. One of them.
Two dogs
and
a cat. There's an old dog, a young dog, and a cat.
And a cat. What if instead of that, it's two old dogs, and they're looking for their old owner? It could just be like a 5-minute short.
Stop underselling it. Go bigger. Go bigger.
10-minute short.
Nice.
I want it to be 2D animated is the thing, so I don't want it to be a full movie, because if it's a full movie, it's going to be in 3D. Oh, real quick, just thought of another great animated dog. This isn't a Disney dog, but it's worthwhile. It's a worthwhile comparison, because I just thought about the old cowboy dog in An American Tale 2, Fievel Goes West.
Yeah, he's pretty good.
That's great.
He's got that same energy. This dog reminded me of him a lot.
Yeah, and also that movie has like a plot that and does the Old West thing better. I don't know. It's frustrating. This movie sucks.
That movie has a great villain and a lot of energy, and this movie has neither of those.
It's misplaced, but at least it has it, you know? I guess that's the thing.
Yeah. This movie had nothing happening. And honestly, that's really exhausting in a movie. The best I could say for it is it was relatively short, but like...
It's 77 minutes, but it feels like an eternity. It feels like an eternity. So let's go through some history, because I have to talk about the history of this movie.
Okay.
So we are going to talk about this movie for longer than it exists, unfortunately. So first, let's start with the budget. How much do you think this movie cost to make? Actually, scratch that.
$15.
This movie cost $110 million.
Get the fuck out.
Yeah.
I feel like Aladdin was like $20
million. I think Aladdin was up there. I think Aladdin, we start hitting the $50 million range.
No, I'm serious. Because I think when we talked about Aladdin, we said something about how now I can't think of his name.
Wow. $28 million. Holy shit.
$28 million. Yeah, we were talking about how fucking give me his name.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Robin Williams.
Thank you, Christ. I kept on trying to make his name Will. Robin Williams, his Will usual Rob asking Williams. Price was like $8 million at the time. And how like that would have been a third of that movie's budget.
Yeah.
I can't believe they made that one for $28 million and this one took $100 million.
I mean, and
that's insane.
10 years later, right? Like, that's the thing, right? Okay, hold on real quick, because I need to double check something now. Because Brother Bear, which was supposed to come out after this movie. There's a world in which Brother Bear was the last Disney animated movie ever made. I don't know how I feel about that. Brother Bear was $46 million.
Yeah, so what the hell?
And Princess and the Frog, because that's the next one.
I bet they put money into that one, to be fair.
$105 million.
Yeah, okay.
So, not as much. And also, that's like, they put more into Home on the Range. So, here's
the
thing.
They put more into Home on the Range. Like, what the hell?
Here's the reason why. Because, you know, we're looking at this, and it's like, how did they sink this much money into this movie? Home on the Range's production started in, I believe, 1994. Because the director of Pocahontas wanted to do a Western movie. He ended up doing Pocahontas instead, but he was really attached to the idea of doing an animated feature about, like, Annie Oakley and Buffalo Bill. Like, he wanted to do a Western really badly.
That's fine. Like, okay. I don't know if it would have been good. A lot of these directors have one of their favorite pet projects they always want to make. And then when it comes out, it's like, oh, I don't care about your favorite pet project. I was not blown away by Treasure Planet. I don't think Treasure Island needs to be made into more movies. I think it could probably just sit there. But like, I know that that was those two directors. That was what they had wanted to do forever. And like, fine, I guess. But like, I don't know, do something else.
Yeah, well, and so here's
make Pocahontas.
So they made Pocahontas, but when Pocahontas was done, Mike Gabriel decided to go back, and he wrote a 40-page script, a treatment script, for a movie about a kid from quote-unquote the Far East, end quote.
Okay.
Who gets whose dad owns a railroad. He gets knocked off a train into a river and becomes gets adopted by a bunch of cowboys. The project was called Sweating Bullets. And by 1999, this movie has been abandoned.
I do want to mention though, that is actually an excellent name.
It's a great name.
I wasn't sure if I was for any part of this movie, but I am for the name Sweating Bullets.
So, it's about to get even wilder because this movie's script gets rewritten 3 times.
Mm-hmm.
Because by 1999, we've abandoned this idea. The script has been rewritten into a supernatural Western about a weak-willed cowboy who goes to a ghost town and finds that it's haunted by an undead cattle hustler named Alameda Slim, who makes his herd of ghost cows bigger by driving other people's cattle ranches off cliffs.
Yes. Give me some of that Guybrush Threepwood energy.
This
sounds great.
This sounds amazing. They couldn't get this idea into a workable script.
LucasArts kept suing them? What was the problem? It sounds awesome.
I don't know.
They should have called me. I would have gotten a workable script out of this.
How old were you at the time? 5?
It's just got to be better than Home on the Range.
No, I know. It's so, and here's the thing is in 1999, we rewrite the script again. This time it's about a little bull named Bullets who wants to be like a horse. At this point, but the ghost stuff is still there. At this point, at this point, the story's a bit of a fucking mess.
I mean, it sure sounds like it. Yeah.
So they have to salvage the production, but they don't want to waste, basically 5 years of work that they've already put into drawing up characters and background art. So the artist, the lead artist, Michael Labash, was like, okay, what if instead it's about 3 cows who become bounty hunters to save their farm? They bring in 5 writers to develop a brand new script. So we're at the 4th rewrite at this point. And then in 2000, at the turn of the millennium, Gabriel and his co-director were taken off the project. It's like, you know what? This isn't going anywhere. We're going to take you guys off the project. We're going to move you on to another project. So at this point, Will Finn, who ends up being the director, this is 2000, had just finished directing The Road to El Dorado and then went back to Disney and was put on this project. He gets rid of all of the screenwriters except for one. Yeah.
Sorry, it's just such a huge step down. I was disappointed in him.
He gets rid of all of the other writers, including the guy who ended up writing the Finding Nemo script. And at this point, they finalize the story as we know it, except they still didn't know what to do with Alameda Slim. Alan Menken was like, what if he yodels to hypnotize the cows?
Alan, come on! I mean, I'll say this, like you said before, it's the closest thing this movie has to an idea. But also, it's a real step down from a cursed, undead Alameda Slim.
At some point in 2002, 2 years before this movie comes out, they rewrite the beginning of the movie so that Maggie is an outsider and has her own farm. And now we're done. The movie's done.
This, can I say, was genuinely such a mistake. It was the biggest problem that I had was I was like, why does she even care? This her whole deal does not track because she should not give a shit about this farm at all.
Yeah, it's so bananas. And also they were so and I don't want to get too into it, but part of the reason why this was like the last 2D animated feature at the time was because at the time Walt Disney Animation was being headed up by John Lasseter, who had been as part of the acquisition of Pixar, which took forever, but as part of like folding Pixar into Disney over a long period of like a decade, John Lasseter ended up taking the head position at Walt Disney Animation and was 100% dedicated to, hey, we're not doing 2D anymore. 2D is the past.
I feel like over time, the animation community has lost a lot of respect for John Lasseter.
Yeah.
To be fair, not necessarily for this reason.
No.
I mean, this, but honestly, it doesn't help.
No, it doesn't help. Because after this movie was done, the CAPS system, which were the computers that they used to do 2D animation, they were all destroyed except for one.
Oh my God.
Completely destroyed. The desks, the scanning cameras, all of it. All of the traditional 2D animation tools were completely scrapped, except for one, which they basically kept for archival reasons. And it's just like, ugh, what a mess. What a mess.
There is, as far as I know, only one movie, not even an anime movie, but only one movie that I know of that has had such a... messy setup and actually came out looking good, and it's Emperor's New Groove. I feel like we talk about it every time we trip over a movie this bad.
It's truly a wonder, right? Like it turns out that movie is like an absolute miracle job. Anyway, the movie that John Lasseter was pushing everybody to work on after he scrapped these teams and put all of them on other movies, specifically Chicken Little and Meet the Robinsons.
Great. Good job, John.
Yeah.
Christ.
He said,
I'm sorry. This is not the reason to hate John Lasseter.
No, it's not. But you know, it doesn't help.
But it doesn't help. I stand by it. I can hate him for two reasons.
He must have had a vendetta, because when Princess and the Frog was put into production basically by John Musker and Ron Clements, in 2006, like, he was completely against it.
That's so fucking weird.
And the movie did well. Like, it made money, it made back its budget, and it like reviewed really, really well. And they were basically given the green light to do another 2D animated feature. And like, do you want to know whose decision it was to slate that movie for a release date basically at the same day as Harry Potter?
I mean, I feel like I can guess. It was John Lasseter.
And also, this movie had no marketing budget, right? Princess and the Frog had like a $100 million operating budget. Winnie the Pooh had $30 million.
Yeah, I'll tell you, I've said this before. The only reason I knew that Winnie the Pooh movie happened was because I used to watch Craig Ferguson on his late night show.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as I know, he's the only human in the world who ever pushed that movie. Because he was like, hey, I'm in the new Winnie the Pooh movie. You should go see it. And do you know what? He was great.
It was great. It's so good. Yeah. And yeah, it was like set out. It was like put out to die. They were convinced. They were absolutely convinced that 2D animation is dead. And for this movie, ugh.
I'm almost more disappointed that we don't have what could have genuinely be like a huge, like a massive weird flop, like Hunchback, but about a bunch of ghost cows. Like,
yeah.
I want that very, very weird movie that's like a fucking Scooby-Doo episode and like a LucasArts adventure game.
Turned into film.
That sounds so good. Even if it was bad, I'd be like, it's so good how bad this movie is.
You know what the really frustrating thing is? I need to double check this. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. 2003, Pirates of the Caribbean comes out. That movie started as a treatment for...
So they're already on that energy.
Yeah, that movie started as a treatment for, well, for The Bride, but also specifically for the Curse of Monkey Island, allegedly. I don't think it's ever, I think it's one of those things that was like people don't talk about because like the rights issues get really sticky, but the original script for Pirates of the Caribbean, Crystal Blackpool started.
The same ponytail.
Yeah, it's banana. Yeah, yeah. like, come on.
Like, they took the designs from it, basically. I mean, everything except Jack Sparrow.
Even the creator of the series has been like, uh-huh, yeah, like, come on, guys. The second movie, the Ghost Pirate, like, it's the same thing. Come on, guys.
Thank you for listening to Direct to Video.
VHS.
I have been your host, Tony Robusto.
I have been your host, Andy Reyes.
You can find me on Blue Sky at TheaterBats or at my website at inspiredbytrueevents.org.
And you can find me at here at, mm-hmm. What else? You can find me at my other podcast at timeunderpictures.com. We finally released another episode.
There was a great joke in it that Andy didn't appreciate, so you have to listen to it so that you can appreciate that joke.
I still don't appreciate it.
Oh, it was genuinely, it made me laugh out loud in my car while I was listening to it, and then I felt a kinship with Mavis because you fully either missed it or ignored it. Like, you didn't even say that was a bad joke or something. You just kept going. And I was like, oh, I've had that experience before.
Yeah, it's good. It's good. I'm happy that we're back at it again. More things to come, hopefully, soon. So we're going to do Hoodwinked. And then, I assume later, Hoodwinked 2.
Electric Boogaloo.
Hood versus Evil, actually. But good attempt.
Not an awful sequel name, actually. So we're gonna watch those two terrible movies. Find us at direct2.video, and thank you to Scott Buckley for Homeward, which should be playing right now. Have I been playing earlier? We'll see how this cuts together. I got very tired after deciding to watch Hoodwinked. It like a ton of bricks it hit me.
I remember this movie, and it's ooh. Jim Belushi.
I am the ghost.
Jim Belushi's in this.
Would you please?
Stop recording now.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. It's got fucking Anne Hathaway and Glenn Close in it.
And Patrick Warburton. And David Ogden Steers, who is the brother in Frasier. Oh, wait, no, I'm thinking of a different actor. That's David Hyde White. David Ogden Steers is someone else.
He's in MASH.
He's a MASH guy. Good for him.
Oh, and he was Cogsworth.
Oh, nice.
And?
Governor Ratcliffe? And Jumba.
And Jumba. There he is. All right, well, it turns out this is one of my favorite voice actors.
Ever, yeah. You just love it when that happens? God, I love the sentence that this film was inspired by Rashomon and Pulp Fiction.
Fucking, are we going to watch Hoodwinked?
Listen, I am here to give you options.
I didn't expect to be hooked by the cast of Hoodwinked. It did not occur to me that might happen.